Well, good morning, each of you. It's good to be with you this morning, and I was just so blessed and encouraged by the service this far and the focus on hearts. In our Sunday school lesson, looking at the parable of the sower and the condition of our hearts, and then that final song, song of aspiration in our hearts. And it just flows very well with the subject I'm going to look at this morning, thinking of our heart as well, and a question that I would like us to ponder as we go through this message, thinking about where is your heart. And as I was studying, I realized that the subject of the heart in the Bible is very vast. There's 823 times in the Bible that it mentions heart. And we could spend all morning just reading verses from the Bible about our hearts. And maybe that would be a good exercise sometime, just to see what the Bible says about our hearts. This morning, I want to focus on where our heart is at. So first of all, thinking of what our heart is. And this last week, I had the opportunity to see my heart. And it was a picture of my heart. I had a CAT scan this last week and was sitting in the doctor's office, and he showed me the screen, scrolling through the image of my insides, and just casually offhand, he said, "Oh, there's your heart." So I got to see my heart, and our physical hearts are amazing organs and can't live without them. When the heart stops, the life stops. But when the Bible talks about our heart, it's not talking about the physical heart most times. There's different ways that it's used, but essentially our heart refers to our inner self, or you could say our genuine self. Sometimes we can have an outward appearance or a persona, a front that we can put on for others, and something we put on for the public, but in our heart is who we really are. And it's also the origin of our desires. What do we really want? What are our desires? What do we value? That's coming from our heart. Jesus said our words and our actions come from our heart. So in a way, by asking where is your heart, I'm asking where are you? And if our heart is our inner self, our genuine self, where our heart is, that's where we're at. And it's a deep question, maybe uncomfortable to think about. But I'd like to think about that this morning, and the text that I'd like to read is from Proverbs chapter 4, so you can turn there, and I'll be reading verses 10 to 27 from Proverbs chapter 4, and this is the perspective of a father entreating his son to follow the path of wisdom. And if you're a parent, you know that there's a point in which our children need to make decisions on their own, and we can point them to wisdom and the right path and encourage them to follow that, but they need to make their own decisions, and I think God does the same for us. He's given us the path of wisdom and the path of life, and he says, guides us in the path of life. So, Proverbs chapter 4, verse 10 is where I'll start and read through the end of the chapter. Hear, O my son, and receive my sayings, and the years of thy life shall be many. I have taught thee in the way of wisdom. I have led thee in right paths. When thou goest, thy steps shall not be straitened, and when thou runnest, thou shalt not stumble. Take fast hold of instruction. Let her not go. Keep her, for she is thy life. Enter not into the path of the wicked, and go not in the way of evil men. Avoid it, pass not by it, turn from it, and pass away. For they sleep not except they have done mischief, and their sleep is taken away, unless they cause some to fall. For they eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. But the path of the just is as the shining light that shines more and more unto the perfect day. The way of the wicked is as darkness. They know not at what they stumble. My son, attend to my words. Incline thine ear unto my sayings. Let them not depart from thine eyes. Keep them in the midst of thine heart. For they are life to those that find them, and health to all their flesh. Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Put away from thee a froward mouth, and perverse lips put far from thee. Let thine eyes look right on, and thine eyelids look straight before thee. Ponder the path of thy feet, and let all thy ways be established. Turn not to the right hand, nor to the left. Remove thy foot from evil. There's a lot of wisdom tucked into that passage there. And this passage is familiar to me. This is one that I memorized in Bible quizzing years ago. And it is such an excellent chapter to look at and study. And I have 3 points that I want to look at regarding what this chapter says. They all kind of connect together regarding our heart, where our heart's at, and the path that we're on, and what our part is in maintaining our heart. That's the goal. Got 3 points: guide, guard, and give thought. Before I get into those points, I do want to lay just a little bit of a context or background that we will look at these points in regarding our Western culture. So we live in American culture, Western society, and there's a popular culture that kind of goes along with the perception of America. And there are ideas that are promoted within that culture. And there's a song that I remember from when I was a teenager listening to different songs, and I'm not recommending it by any means, but I remember the words of this particular song. The title was Listen to Your Heart, and it's a catchy tune. You listen to it and it sticks in your mind. But that message of listening to your heart, and it just says it over and over again, listen to your heart, listen to your heart. The idea that we should follow our inner longings. And there's so many other examples of popular culture that the same message is brought out, and it's very subtle, and it's almost implied many times, just kind of in the background. Same idea: follow your inner longing, your inner identity. And another example is the Disney movie Frozen. And I don't know if any of you have seen that. I have not seen it. I've seen parts of it. Very common Disney movie. And the whole storyline is about this girl, Elsa, and she has these inner powers. And she uses these in maybe the wrong way, and some bad things happen. But it's only when she embraces her identity and follows through with those internal powers that she has that she can bring everything back together. And it's just the same idea of embracing your inner self. And that's when true life, things work. And the implied result of these and so many other examples that you could look at is that we find fulfillment in embracing our inner self and looking on the inside. And if you're looking for that message, you'll see it. Our society tells us that if we have desires, we need to pursue those and fulfill those in that inner sense of identity. There's a man that I encountered in studies, Aleister Crowley. I don't know if anybody's familiar with that name. Just for context, he was called the most wicked man on earth by somebody of his time. There's a publication that called him the most wicked man on earth. He was an occultist, and he lived in the early 1900s. And he just dabbled into modern paganism. He was raised a Christian, ironically, but he left that as a young man and dabbled into different Eastern religions, mysticism, and eventually he developed a new belief system, or some have called it a religion, and it's called Thelema. I had never heard of it before, but the core idea of this belief system was that each human has inside a true will, and our task is to find that true will and pursue that. And there was a moral code for this as well that was summed up with the statement, "Do what thou wilt." And he even wrote a book with that title, "Do What Thou Wilt." And this is modern paganism, at least one branch of it. And if you look into that, there's so many different varieties of that. It's mind-boggling. And there's a lot more that goes with that. There's ceremonies and such. But if we think about that basic moral code, do what thou wilt, with that in mind, we can look around our greater culture and we can see modern paganism all around us. It's not overt, and it doesn't have all those pagan ceremonies that we think of in our minds, but this core belief of do what thou wilt is still there, and it's permeated our world, brought out in songs like Listen to Your Heart, and movies like Frozen, wrapped up in catchy tunes and captivating storylines. And it's in a way that we can easily miss the underlying message. And we can see the fruits of what that looks like played out in our society. And eventually it leads to things like gender-affirming care. You've heard of that, which is anything but gender-affirming. It's more along the lines of mutilation. But it's that idea where the inner self takes precedence. But the message of Christianity stands in contrast. Instead of do what thou wilt, it says do what is right. And I want to jump in here looking at Proverbs and thinking about the right paths to be on. So first point, guide. This passage talks a lot about the path that we're on. And the path that we're on is closely tied to our heart. Where our heart is at, that's going to show what path we're on. And we want to guide our heart. We don't want to let it just take whatever path is easiest, to do whatever feels right, to follow our heart. We're called to take every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. So Proverbs 4 brings out two different paths. Talks about the different paths in different ways. Verse 11, we see that there are right paths that this father has showed his son. Right paths. Verse 18, we see that there is a path of the just that is as the shining light. That's a path of light, path of justice. And then it's contrasted with the path of darkness. Verse 14. We see the path of the wicked, and verse 19, the path of darkness. And we see the path of the wicked is just filled with these people who are bent on mischief and making others stumble. We're called to avoid that path. So how do we know what path we're on? And as it's written here, it makes it very obvious. There's these two distinct paths, the path of the right path, path of justice and light, and then there's the path of the wicked. So how do we know? How do we apply that to our life? Because a lot of times it's not that clear cut. And there's three insights that I thought of in thinking about that question. And first of all, in choosing the path of the just or the path of light that we see here, we need to go against the message that is all around us of following our heart. And let's not underestimate the power of culture around us to shape the way that we see our desires. It takes a lot of vigilance and commitment to guide our path, and the way of wisdom is countercultural. Let's remember that. Sometimes it means saying no. Another insight that I see from these verses about our path, how do we know what path we're on, is in verses 10 and 11. Hear, O my son, and receive my sayings, and the years of thy life shall be many. I have taught thee in the way of wisdom. I have led thee in right paths. So here we see a father telling his son to follow his example. And I think that's one way that we can find the right path in life. To think of a person who is a godly example, one who has experience in life, is further down the road of life than we are, and is in a place that we want to be. And hopefully it's a father, but it could be anybody, and it could be more than one person as well. But seek out those people and seek their advice. Let them be mentors. Do we see this person was shown the right paths? So listen closely to the advice of mentors. And then third observation, let's be sure that we consider carefully how the decisions that we are making today will affect our path down the road. And there's a Robert Frost poem that you may have heard before. It's called The Road Not Taken. And it just describes this author on a pathway, and the road diverges, and he's looking, which way do I go? And he can only see so far down the path. And the one path was well worn. The other one was not as much. It looked like there was a lot of traffic. And he said, I took the road less traveled, and that has made all the difference. Sometimes just a little change, or what we might think of as a small decision, can make a big difference in our endpoint and alter our destination drastically. So consider carefully the decisions that we make. So next I want to think about guarding our heart. As I mentioned, these points have some overlap. Guide and guard and give thought, they all kind of connect together. And I'm pulling this from verse 23. Familiar verse, keep your heart, and don't just keep it with all diligence. This is something we want to work hard towards. And I like the wording in the NIV. It says to guard, above all else, guard your heart. And I think the word guard gives us different mental images that we can connect with. And maybe you've seen pictures or videos of the Queen's Guard, which I guess now it's the King's Guard. There's a King of England now, but over there they have the King's Guard, and these men dressed up in their bright red coats, and they've got their big, tall, fuzzy hats on, and they're ultra formal, and they're very stern. They don't smile, and they're there for a purpose. They are there to make sure nobody gets in that doesn't belong there. And that's a picture of a guard that came to my mind. Another different aspect of guarding is in growing a garden. And if we have a garden, we're very intentional about what we allow to grow in our gardens and what gets weeded out. We guard our gardens, at least hopefully we do. And if we don't, we end up with a mess. But the key phrase in verse 23, why we're doing this, is the last part of the verse there. For out of it are the issues of life. Our life flows from the place our heart is at. And Jesus says, from the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And there's a war for our hearts. Let's not be unaware of that. There are forces at work wanting to capture our heart and our desires. There's probably times that we have desires that we just know are not good for us, and they're going to lead to a place that we don't want to be. And times like that, we need to treat it like a weed in the garden. We got to pull it out. Or like an unauthorized person trying to enter the Buckingham Palace. And that stern guard saying, no, you're not coming in here. There's a quote from Charles Spurgeon that I came across. It's very fitting. He says, inasmuch as the heart is the most important part of man, for out of it are the issues of life, it would be natural to expect that Satan, when he intended to do mischief to manhood, would be sure to make his strongest and most perpetual attacks upon the heart. By winning the heart, Satan wins the person. So we need to be careful to guard what we allow into our minds and our lives. What are we listening to and watching? I mentioned those underlying messages of popular culture around us. And I think sometimes we don't realize the shaping power that that has on us. And I don't even realize that. I hear people talk about it and just the powerful force of culture. Let's not be ignorant and unaware of that. We need to be diligent in guarding, filtering out things that aren't helpful. And I think one practical way that we can guard our hearts is in being intentional about building a home culture. So culture is the things that we do, what we call normal. And as I mentioned, we live in a greater American culture, Western society. There's things that go along with that. And I think a smaller subsect, we have a Mennonite subculture and things that we do as Mennonites that we call normal. But I think on a smaller scale yet, we have our home culture, and that's our household. And there's a lot of families here this morning, and I am as well in the middle of raising a family. And just thinking about what practices we incorporate as normal in our houses. And I know for me it's hard just to stay on top of the chaos sometimes. And yes, it does get chaotic in our house different times. But beyond all that, are we intentionally nurturing an environment that focuses on what's important? How do we schedule our time? What is held up as important? Do we emphasize the Word of God and building strong relationships, family devotions? So the power of a culture is very strong, and a good home culture is very powerful as well. So we need to be intentional in doing what we can, where we can, in our families and in our homes. The final point I want to think about is giving thought. And it comes from verse 26. Ponder the path of your feet. And this is one area that our culture, American culture, doesn't teach us to do very well, and that's to ponder and meditate. And that came up in our Sunday school discussion, just meditating. And we're busy people. There's a lot going on. And it's hard to find time to sit still and to think. The word amusement is very telling. We live in an amusement-driven society, and there's so much entertainment available. If you think about that word amuse, and the word muse means to think deeply about something, and when you add the prefix a in front of it, it negates it. So amusing means not to think deeply. And I know there's different connotations of the word now. We use it a little bit different way. But really, back to its basic etymology, it means not thinking deeply. We're amused. We don't have to think. About this quote from Blaise Pascal. He was a man who lived in the 1600s. And it's interesting. He said, "All of humanity's problems stem from man's inability to sit quietly in a room alone." And just for context, he wrote that in the 1600s. This was not the era of smartphones and TV. And to be clear, I don't agree with what he says, but and maybe he didn't either, maybe it was just hyperbole, but it's interesting to see what he brings out as a problem, and that is people don't want to think. They can't sit by themselves alone in a room. And even recently, I came across a study from 2014 that showed that people really don't like sitting in a room alone with nothing but their thoughts. And surprisingly, it found that people would even prefer to give themselves an electric shock. They have the choice, sit alone for 15 minutes or give yourself a shock. And some people rather shock themselves. I don't know what voltage that was, but it's telling. We don't want to sit alone and think. So why is that? It's maybe different for different people, and I mentioned this to my wife, this study, and she said, "Oh, I would love 15 minutes alone." And I was probably at the end of a busy, hectic day. So it's context is very valuable there. But why don't we like to think? I think our fast pace of life doesn't help. There's always something to do, something to fill our schedules with, and we can be so busy that sometimes the easiest thing to do is let go of our quiet time. And I think if that's the case, we're demonstrating our priorities in what we see as important, what we let go if we're too busy. So as we think about this question of where is our heart, let's make sure we take the time to ponder, like it says, ponder the path of our feet that we're on, establish our way. Are we established? It's the practice of introspection, which means inspection on the inside, considering and contemplating where we're at, where we want to be, and are we on the right path to get there? Thinking of our book study, consider the end. Where is the path headed that we're on? And this goes right along with the other two points as well, guide and guard, and you can't really separate them. If we want to guide and to guard well, we need to give thought properly and to ponder. Take time to meditate. Let your eyes look right on. Verse 25, let your eyes look right on, your eyelids look straight before you. Stay focused. There's some things that we'll need to put away. Verse 24 talks about putting away a froward mouth, perverse lips. Ponder. Think about what we need to do. And in conclusion, I do want to clarify that the place of our heart doesn't depend only on us. And I think we'd be sadly mistaken if we thought that our heart place, the place of our heart, depends only on us. You know, we're reading from Proverbs, and it's the Old Testament. There's a lot of wisdom here that we can learn from. We can learn a lot from this. But let's not forget that the true source of change is Jesus. And if our heart is in a place that we don't want to be, we need to take that to Jesus. Let's be faithful in doing our part as well. It's a process of sanctification. We bring our needs to Jesus, and we're changed from the inside out. And sometimes it takes a lot of work. For us, we need to be faithful in doing what we can, guiding, guarding, and giving thought to our heart and our path. So where is your heart? Where are you? Where's my heart? Are we following our heart, or are we guarding our heart? May God bless each one of us as we strive to apply this wisdom that we see here in Proverbs 4, guiding, guarding, and giving thought to our heart and the path that we're on. And there was a song that came to mind as I was preparing, and Lee, if we could lead, if we could have the song afterwards, Take My Life and Let It Be. I think it's 517 in the Hymns of the Church. So let's have a closing word of prayer. Lord, thank you for all that you have done for us. And we are your humble servants, and we look to you for the strength that we need to guard our hearts and just to give thought and guide the path that we're on. I pray that you would help us to be faithful as we strive to do that. Help us to take a careful look at our hearts and see where we're at. And I pray that you would show us the right path, guide us, and help us in that journey. Pray that we could be totally consecrated to you. I ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.